on 2FM with Green Fern. Fuel your day with Green Fern's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Thanks to the superstar Jenny Green. Jenny's back tomorrow to kick off the weekend. It's Thursday, the 15th of April, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, is all hope lost for Dublin hosting the Euros matches? We'll get the latest as the Mayor of London makes the case for taking our games.
We are there to help UEFA, should they need our help. They'll make a decision around Dublin. It's important that we don't jump the gun. But I'm hoping that UEFA have been impressed with the brilliant work their FA has done, the work we've done to make sure our games can be COVID secure. We've got fan zones ready to go that are COVID safe, working incredibly hard. Not to allow our enthusiasm to jeopardise public health. We think it is possible to have a safe Euro 2020s this summer, and I'm hoping that UEFA sees the hard work we've done. So should there be an opportunity for us to step in, we're ready to do so.
The great Fiona Hayes is with us to talk Six Nations as Ireland name an unchanged side to face France this Saturday.
We look at last week's performance. We got off to a really good start in that first half, and it's really how we want to play the game. So giving them that opportunity against the French this weekend was really key, that they're rewarded for the good start they had.
Plus, we have Jeff Shepherd on Steph Curry's hot streak and Aaron Rodgers' quiz show credentials, and Irish gymnast Rhys McLennigan is showing his ambitions.
I'm going into every competition with that gold medal in mind, and I'm not shy of saying that because I know that I'm capable of it, and there's no point in shying away from that. I take confidence in the fact that I'm the number one contender for that gold medal in every competition that I go to, and that's a very powerful thing.
Game on 2FM.
We would love to hear from you by text on 51552, or you can tweet us at GameOn2FM. Marie, we've got the Irish team for the weekend, but first I want to start with asking you how you're doing after Liverpool. I know we're going to get on to the rugby and it's the biggest show in town, but Liverpool nil all last night out of the Champions League. You must be disappointed.
If it wasn't a radio show, I could be all picture, no sound, but I can't be. Yeah, look, it was really disappointing, Donica. I guess it was kind of one of those hope rather than expectation kind of games, and unfortunately they failed to deliver despite everybody trying to make a case for how they possibly could. But I think when you look at it, last night was the ninth time this season that Liverpool failed to score at Anfield, and if you just compare it to the entirety of the 1920 campaign where Liverpool scored every single game on home turf. So I just think that when you start to compare what they were and where they are now, there just really is very little comparison, and realistically it probably was the results that we were really expecting, but it was just disappointing. The whole season has been disappointing. You know, at times some excitement, some good play, there was chances, but they couldn't sustain it really in the end. Salah has been good all throughout, but you know, when you look at those around him like Firmino and Mane, they're not performing, they're not getting the goals, so it's just going to be too difficult for them. But look, top four.
Because everyone's been focusing on the defence, but your point there is they're just not scoring goals. You know, last night was a perfect example of that.
Yeah, and I think we've probably been making a little bit too much about the fact that Jota was there and he was pushing the other two, but I don't know if you throw in Jota and Mane and Firmino, if they're up to it really when you compare to what Salah has been doing, which is all the work, and they haven't been providing the support and adding on the extras like they were in the past. And like, the defence hasn't been that bad really when you look at the stats, but they do need to start trying to score a few more goals. But the Champions League is over now, so at least they can focus on trying to get that top four, and if they can take that little bit of Premier League form that they started to show last weekend and continue it for the rest of the season, then maybe.
Do you think there'll be a shake-up in that that tree at the top for them? Haaland and Kane in at the end of the season?
I'd take Mbappe. Bring Mbappe in. That's the other two. That would be good. Yep. But I think we should also probably mention the Man City-Borussia Dortmund as well. That game, Man City probably clinical really is the way to look at it. They just keep getting the job done. But I thought it was pretty phenomenal to see Jude Bellingham score a goal just 17 years of age for Borussia Dortmund. He's such a talent, and maybe, look, somebody like him could be good for Liverpool.
Yeah, absolutely. Man United in action as well tonight, so there is plenty going on. Marie, we did get our Irish team for the weekend. Adam Griggs has named an unchanged starting 15. He's also included Amy Lee Murphy-Crowe on the bench, and Amy Hooban. So there is a good excitement. It's brilliant when you can put back-to-back games. I know everyone's chatting about the camp and having 20 to work together, but you also work on fitness and conditioning. And for us to be able to put out the same 15 back-to-back weeks is certainly a sign of the strides we're making. We were chatting to Sene last night, and we know the atmosphere within the camp is high, and I'm looking forward to chatting to Fiona Hayes, and we'll go through every part of the team with her. But for me, I'm delighted with that we can do a back-to-back starting 1 to 15.
I know a lot of people probably outside of Ireland are looking ahead to France and England kind of culmination of the tournament and them being the two best teams. But I spoke to Hannah Tyrrell today for the television programme on Saturday, and she is absolutely gunning for this game. I have never seen anybody so excited and determined and just so confident. So, like, from listening to her today, look, you never know what's going to happen.
Absolutely. And look, I know they're small things, but Emily Scariff, who's an incredible centre for England, but her just coming out with that comment, you know, that they're, you know, we rest up now for this week and we look forward to playing France, you know, like, that's even itching me, you know what I mean, as a former Irish player. I'm there, how can you not, you know, just a little bit of respect. And
well, Hannah was bubbling today, bubbling. It was like the most perfect lead-in, really, because she was just so confident and driven, and like, they have that narrative as well behind them, which I think always helps.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, we'll be going through it shortly with Fiona Hayes, so do get your questions in to 51552 if you have any to bung off. We're looking forward to chatting about that.
Yeah, so look, I think we've probably spoken quite a bit about the Euros on this show for the last while, Donica, and trying to figure out, probably even on a broader scale, really, what's going to happen with sport over the next few months in terms of crowds. We've seen Leinster bring forward an initiative where they're going to try and get some crowds back. But the Euros really will be the big one to see if Dublin do get to host those games, which had been so built up when we did get them. So we're joined now by Owen Conroy, who's Chief Executive of Titan Experience. So they look after a lot of sports marketing and big events. And Owen, you might be able to paint a bit of a clearer picture for us on where the Euros are at for the Dublin Games.
Yeah, how you doing, Marie? Donica, good to talk to you. Just picked up there in the sports news too, the comments from the Mayor of London. No eye in team there, because obviously Dublin has been on a journey for the last 4 years as one of 12 potential host cities for what was to be UEFA 2020. Obviously moved forward a year because of all things COVID. And April the 19th, next Monday, we're going to, get the final decision from UEFA in terms of where we fit in the overall picture as we move forward. It's been very challenging, I suppose, for the team involved, in fairness, headed up by Declan Conroy. There's been tremendous work by Dublin City Council, the FAI, Martin Murphy there in the stadium as well. So Monday is going to tell a lot. And as you can see, there are other cities waiting on standby if things don't work out for us.
And as it stands right now, Owen, what the FAI have told UEFA is that if we are to hold games, there won't be any fans at them here in Dublin.
Yeah, I suppose in so many respects, Marie, it's all about timing. Even if we were to cast our own minds back to late November when, you know, prior to, you know, I suppose a very, very tough time for everybody through Christmas and into January and COVID. Back around last November when things were probably, a little bit better from a COVID perspective, you know, there was some rumblings that potentially the tail end of the Six Nations, we might be able to potentially get a game in the Aviva, or certainly fans back to the Aviva in some shape or form. But obviously that wasn't to be, and obviously nobody wants to go back to where we were in January. And at the end of the day, despite the, the ambition of all involved, you have to respect where NFL and government are at. And, you know, we are moving at a different pace to the UK, which is obviously very difficult for us as well to look over and see Carabao Cup final potentially having a significant amount of fans. And they are moving at a different pace to us. So I guess we just have to respect the advice that we're getting at the moment, and UEFA will decide whether that's good enough on Monday.
Owen, what would we need to turn it around? What percentage would we need in the Aviva?
Yeah, I guess, Dunica, where they were aiming for was somewhere in the region of 20 to 25% capacity, give or take. I mean, all kinds of work was done over the last 6 to 9 months by the wider team in terms of the various scenario plans. And I guess, as you touched on there a little bit earlier about Leinster Rugby, and I suppose a Clare man, a Clare woman and a Corkman don't want to be given too much credit to Leinster Rugby at the moment. They're flying, but in fairness to Mick Dawson and his team there, it was very encouraging this week to see, because what you're looking for at the end of the day, Dunica, is a line in the sand and a benchmark from which maybe we can grow from. And if that happens to be with the work that Leinster Rugby is doing, that would be more than welcome, because, you know, Croke Park, as we look on into the summer and All-Ireland finals potentially around August time, you know, there potentially are some ambitions with the GAA as well to explore the journey that Leinster Rugby are on.
Being a little bit harsh, of course the Euros is a massive event, but it's not going to be like we'd expected it. Are we better off focusing on something like that, like you mentioned, what Leinster are looking to do, or, you know, working our way towards the GAA Championship and having cases and case studies ready to go for those?
Oh yeah, without a doubt, Dunica. I mean, at the moment, you know, the likes of the wider COVID committee in Croke Park, they were scenario planning last year, because if you remember, as we oscillated through the summer last year, at different times it did look like fans potentially could return to stadiums. So a huge amount of those plans are already there, Dunica. And if we potentially get that first, you know, line in the sand with Leinster, as I touched on, I think that will trigger what could be a much better summer for us. But at the moment, it's hard to know till potentially NPHET and government give the likes of the IRFU or Leinster Rugby or the GAA the official go-ahead.
Realistically, though, do you think it's going to be possible? Like, will it be a summer with even limited crowds, maybe the end of the summer at GAA games, at anything else that's on?
Yeah, I'd be hopeful, Marie. I'd be hopeful that, you know, with the developments in rapid testing, antigen testing, looking at what's going on in other stadiums as well. And I know an awful lot of the experts involved as well, whether it's, you know, Eamon O'Boyle and associates who do a lot of the health and safety work both here in Ireland and internationally for Stadia, Martin Murphy and his team. We're all watching what's going on, and there's an awful lot of best practice here in Ireland too that hopefully, if things continue on the trajectory that they are at the moment, I'd be hopeful that for later on in the summer we could be in that place and back in Croke Park.
Owen, just on your own side of it, you know, the sports marketing and events, we've seen and we've heard from the, you know, organisations like there, IRFU, even people go. We've also heard of players taking less contracts. What's it like now in the world of sports and marketing and events? How are you finding that?
Yeah, it's been tremendously difficult, Dunica. You know, both from, you know, from your own team's perspective, the industry's perspective, you know, we've lost an awful lot of companies, a lot of colleagues to the sector over the last 12, 14 months. And then, I guess, too, you know, there's probably still another 3 to 6 months in it. I mean, yeah, there's been, you know, an awful lot of work done in terms of, you know, activating sports sponsorship to digital and broadcast, and that's fantastic. But we all thrive on live and shared experiences. And for the industry, I guess, now as we look into the summer, the big hope would be that, you know, whether it's schools have returned, you know, some kids coming back later in the month to juvenile training, that we don't go backwards. But certainly the pace at which things closed down caught even the best of us off guard. And it's been a year of recalibration, looking at different opportunities, different platforms. But certainly, it's good that the end is in sight, I can tell you that.
And do you think the world is going to look different just from a sports marketing point of view when we do fully come out of this?
Yeah, no doubt, Marie, no doubt. I mean, very interestingly, like one of the largest leadership conferences in the world is the Nordic Business Forum. And would you believe, prior to COVID, on the 2-day conference, they would have 7,500 delegates on a Wednesday and 7,500 on a Thursday. But even prior to COVID, they had 25,000 dialing in from all over the world. And certainly digital experiential, which sometimes as well is seen as an add-on to the actual live event, is going to change. Sponsorship contracts are going to change. Business models are going to evolve, certainly over the next 12 to 24 months. And there have certainly been some positives, but you know, we're all looking forward to getting back into stadiums. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, and are sports themselves moving quickly enough in that area then, if that's the case? You know, if it's pushing towards online, are they generating enough interest, you know, within the sports? Is that a new side of the business that needs to be looked after?
Yeah, big time, Dunica. I'd say even going back to, and I know you're retired a small while now, but you know yourself that towards the end of your own career that what brands were looking for from the likes of yourself and professional rugby players in that sphere in terms of digital engagement, sharing content. I mean, even at the moment, for any of the Netflix listeners, watchers and listeners out there, I mean, you look at Drive to Survive over the last number of years and the access that that Formula One has given, and it's all about access now going forward. I think, and from a content generation perspective, sports are going to have to open themselves up to engage fans in a multiplicity of ways, because there's no guarantee either that we're going to get back to full stadiums in the next 12, 24, 36 months. So you've got to look at other ways in which you can generate revenue for the business.
And Owen, just in terms as well, I know that the mass participation sports have been a big part of what Titan do, and you've worked with Ironman and like you're very familiar with the operations of the Dublin City Marathon. Do you think we're going to see them back anytime soon?
It's an interesting one for the, you know, the likes of, we'd say, rights holders like Ironman or the Dublin City Marathon or a couple of the other mass participation events we're involved in. You know, they're commercial entities, and one of the challenges in mass participation in general, Marie, is that within the business model, you need a certain amount of athletes to get to a place where the event is viable and then obviously become profitable, you know, depending on how many numbers you retrieve over your threshold. And that's going to be an awful lot more challenging as you try to evolve with the attendance levels that government in various countries will allow. And then you have to layer on, for certainly the near to medium future, the whole COVID measures that are going to be needed as well. So I think we see, last summer you very much saw a move towards virtual events. Even an event we're involved in with Cycling Ireland, even though cycling has exploded obviously in the last 12 months, the Great Dublin Bike Ride, we're not giving up hope that we won't have the Great Dublin Bike Ride in September, but we already scenario planning about a dual event that could be the Great Ireland Virtual Cycle, along with what government and NPHET might allow in terms of families coming together to cycle in groups as well. So that's the kind of scenario planning that's going on now in the mass participation space.
You nearly have to be a bit ahead of the curve, really, Owen, as well, and be prepared for it. A bit like yourselves with the Leaders' Lounge, which is coming up very shortly.
Yeah, actually, this time next week, hopefully, we'll be reflecting now on, it's on next Thursday, Marie. We're drawing in on 2,000 attendees. So, funnily enough, born in a virtual world, probably the inverse of what I touched on with the Nordic Business Forum, and that it's a digital business and sports leadership event. And, you know, next week, we have an old friend of Dunica's, Brian Driscoll, joining Joanna Reardon, Chanel McCoy, Paul McGinley, who's our co-collaborator at Razzie Erasmus. And it's a full studio event, Marie. In many respects, it's like TV programming. And that's the standard that we have to bring now. Like I mentioned with Drive to Survive or Netflix is the Last Dance. That's the area you're now competing in. So it does, in a way, lend itself to augmenting, I suppose, new products, new ways of interacting with fans and customers and clients. So, yeah, it's here to stay. There's no doubt about that.
Owen, you mentioned, you know, two of the greatest in our game, Razzie and Driscoll, but the world has changed as well. You know, not saying that they're irrelevant, but how's the talent speaking now on behalf of a changing world as well?
Yeah, it's a great point, Dunica. I mean, in terms of Brian and Joanne for the first section, it's not really Brian's sport and career we're reflecting on. It's more to do with how Brian is a young Irish captain at 23, obviously with the captains yourself for a few years, they found his voice as a leader. And the same with Joanne. And what's been very interesting, and no more so than yourselves, do your pre-production meetings, we've put hours into the research and engaging the talent with each other. And it's been incredible to watch Brian and Joanne develop that dynamic as they talk about how finding your voice as an inspirational leader, because for so many at the moment who are working remotely or disconnected from head office or disconnected from HQ, engaging with your colleagues and being inspired by each other is an awful lot more challenging than now. You know, we no longer have these water cooler moments. So that's what we focus on, Dunnock. It's kind of the insights and principles of leadership as opposed to potentially the kind of arc of sporting careers.
Well, it sounds fascinating. Owen Conroy of Titan Experience, thanks so much for joining us, and we'll be keeping an eye on that Euros announcement next Monday. We're going to take a very quick break and then we're back with Jeff Shepherd.
Dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, welcome back to Game On, and it's time to cross the Atlantic and join our great friend and teammate Jeff Shepherd. Shep, how are you?
I'm great, guys. How are y'all doing today?
We're great. Shep, I'm really interested in Green Bay's Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers. I suppose he'd always have the plays on his hand, but he's now co-hosting Jeopardy, and he's after using an awful lot of stick notes to remind him to even small little things like stand up straight.
That's right. Yeah, you know, it's been a really interesting story. You know, look, I mean, obviously football is, you know, a very passionate sport here in America. And, you know, it constantly makes news. I mean, you know, it's a year-round sport now. And it's been funny to watch Aaron Rodgers, you know, all this talk about what's his future look like and how many more years does he plan to play. And look, he, you know, he's always kind of been a different guy when it comes to this. I mean, he's got a very guarded personal life, and, you know, he's from Northern California, and he's just a quiet guy, you know, pretty typically. But he has made, I mean, he loves the show Jeopardy, the questions and answer trivia game. And, you know, the passing of longtime host Alec Trebek happened last year. And he has been picked to be one of the people to fill in as a, I guess, you know, a fill-in host of the show. And so he just taped his two-week run about 2 weeks ago. And look, guys, you know, they film it, you know, it runs out throughout the whole year, but they film this basically over about a 3-day period. I mean, it is fast with how quickly they get this done. So I think he was probably a little used to the pace. I mean, think about almost like a 2-minute offense, you know, rush there. But yeah, he took it very seriously, and he wants to be named the permanent host. I mean, that, you know, we talk about what are all these guys going to do when they get done playing football. He wants to be the host of Jeopardy. This is his post-career planning, and I just think it's phenomenal. You know, Donners, I can't imagine you were thinking you were going to be a radio host when you were playing rugby, but here we are, aren't we?
I was going to say, Donners, it's exactly like your transition from rugby player to broadcaster.
Yeah, Shep, I retired, and 3 weeks later I was doing a kid show, so I went from having a massive fight on the pitch against Harlequins to wearing a pair of white jeans and a t-shirt that if you rubbed it one way it was a unicorn, and if you rubbed it the other way it was a mermaid, and I was there, how did I get to this point in my life?
And you love it.
Boy, you filled in a lot of answers for me right there. That was very helpful.
Absolutely.
In other news, Chef, Steph Curry is just doing what he always does, which is scoring points, breaking records, and being completely unguardable.
Yeah, you know, Marie, it's been funny. I mean, he's been, you know, pretty hurt the last couple of years. I mean, he doesn't have the greatest ankles. I mean, he's kind of always battled some injuries, you know, with his feet. And look, I mean, foot injuries are always something, always a concern when it comes to basketball players. I mean, they're just so big, you know, and they've got these size 14, you know, feet just pounding around on the ground down there. You'd think they'd sprain an ankle every night, but miraculously they don't. But he has had these issues. Well, he's healthy. And right now, he is on fire. He has scored 30 points 8 games in a row. That is, I mean, that is something that really has not happened in a long, long time in the NBA. I mean, he is just in the zone right now. He scored, they drilled the Oklahoma City Thunder the other night, the last night, and he scored 25 points in the third quarter alone. I mean, he hit 6 three-pointers by himself in the third quarter. The team scored 50 points. I mean, you know, that's a 200-point average if you could keep that up. 200 points in a game if you could keep that up. But it's just interesting to see, you know, Klay Thompson, you know, always got a lot of the headlines, and then he got hurt. And Steph is finally back. And one other note about this I wanted to bring up. You know, before the game, Draymond Green took Steph Curry out. The news came out that he took him out to dinner in Oklahoma City. And the owner of the Golden State Warriors, you know, he's not like broke or anything like that. He's got a couple of billion in the bank. Draymond was able to take out Steph Curry for dinner and buy a $5,000 bottle of wine and put it on the owner's credit card. So, you know, that must be nice.
Yeah, it always is. But is he chasing any particular records, Chef? Who's he chasing, you know?
Well, he just became the all-time leading scorer in the Warriors franchise history, surpassing a little-known guy known as Wilt Chamberlain, you know, who once scored 100 points in a game in the NBA. So, I mean, look, it's not necessarily it's specific records, Donners. I mean, it's just the thought of being, you know, maybe he can't be LeBron or Michael Jordan, but he could be potentially one of, you know, the great, you know, he could be thought of as the greatest Golden State Warrior of all time. He could be thought of one of the game's greatest three-point shooters, which I think it would be hard to argue. And, you know, one of the things that I have always found interesting about Steph Curry is he is someone that kids know, like my kids know who Steph Curry is. Like, they don't watch a lot of NBA, and they're not up when the Warriors are playing because they're, you know, they're California is 2 hours behind where we live. But my sons know who Steph Curry is, and they know how good he is at basketball. He has got a huge following with young basketball fans here in the States.
I'm pretty sure one of my kids has a pair of Steph Curry shoes as well, Shep.
Watch his ankles, Marie, by the sounds of it.
We were chatting a little bit earlier in our first segment of the show about crowds coming back to sport here. Leinster Rugby mm-hmm. have put a proposal together. They're going to try and trial getting some supporters back into one of their games, and all the rest of the associations and organisations will be watching on to see how they do it. What's it look like? What's the landscape looking like in the States?
Yeah, so, and I think we talked about this before, Marie, and it still kind of holds true. A lot of it depends on the location of, you know, the sporting event and what's going on. So, you know, not surprisingly, you know, Florida is an area where you're having a lot of sporting events. I mean, that's where the NBA bubble was last year. They just had a sporting event near and dear to Donners and I heart, WrestleMania. They just had that this past weekend. It was a two-night event, and that was in Tampa. And so, again, it really depends on, you know, the local restrictions and health guidelines. You know, California has pretty much been shut down. I'm not sure what the fan situation is in California. In New Orleans with the Pelicans, they've got a couple of thousand of folks, you know, in the stands. And in New York, they've got a couple thousand folks. It kind of varies by area. Now, the Buffalo Bill, you know, looking forward to football in a couple of months, you know, same thing. Jerry Jones is in Texas. He's like, I want to have a full stadium. The Texas Rangers, a baseball team, they just had an opening day crowd, you know, like 40,000 people in the stands. The Buffalo Bills made an announcement. They want to have full stands, but they want people to prove that they've been vaccinated. And I don't know exactly how you go about doing that. Are we going to start looking at, like, you know, black market vaccine cards? And, you know, that's a whole area that I don't really think we want to go down. But that's the type of stuff you're going to have to do. So, again, it really just depends on the area of the country that you're in and what the local laws are.
Shep, we know one thing that draws a crowd, and you mentioned Steph Curry there, but the likes of big names and David Beckham with his Inter Miami, how are they doing, and is it likely for them to get a crowd back?
Yeah, so, I mean, I thought this was a really interesting article. It's on ESPN.com. You know, obviously, this is a guy, you know, worldwide, unbelievably famous, rich, you know, everything that he's ever had. I mean, everybody, you know, I'm not telling anybody anything they don't know already. But, you know, he's making this transition that a lot of guys make that are former players that are superstars, you know, that become owners of teams. And the Miami team was not good last year. I mean, I think they finished 10th in the Eastern Conference in the MLS, you know, of 14 teams. I mean, that's not a positive year. I think they lost 7 games, or they only won 3. I mean, it was a shortened season because of the virus. But still, the results are not anywhere used to what he, you know, experienced at Man U and, you know, his other stops, even in the United States when he was with the Galaxy in the MLS. It's going to be interesting to see how he transitions into this ownership phase when maybe the team isn't very good for a couple of years. And look, I mean, he says it in this article. He's not going to accept it. I mean, he has got a standard for how he's lived and played his entire life. And he's going to expect that these players live up to it. You know, we've got in the NFL, you've got the Denver Broncos. Well, their big general manager is John Elway. He was a 5-time Super Bowl quarterback for the Broncos. He won 2 of them. And he's really struggled trying to find a quarterback.
Oh, we've lost Shep, so we might as well take a break, Donegal. What do you reckon?
Thanks so much, Shep. You beauty.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new cooked chicken breast fillets are 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, the Women's Six Nations might have had a hard time getting up and running, but it arrived with a bang last weekend. And to look forward to one of the most exciting weekends, we're delighted to be joined by Fiona Hayes. Fiona, how are you?
I'm good, Donegal. How are you?
I'm great. Fiona, last week we might look back at it because, just looking at the Leinster game and there was a clash with other sports, it was brilliant what went on with Rachel Blackmore. But for the girls this weekend, to have France at home and it's the only show in town when it comes to rugby is fantastic.
Absolutely. I'm delighted with that. What a game of rugby we were treated to last week. Against Wales, we saw the girls in full force. So I know it kind of overlapped with the Leinster game, but I was speaking to a couple of people who went back and watched the women's game after it, and we saw Brian O'Driscoll did it as well. So it's really good to see people going back and looking at it, but especially this week it's going to be live, and I would hope everyone will be tuning in, because what an amazing game we saw last week. I'm very excited to it.
Fiona, it helps as well, and it's probably really important when you think about it, that it was such a good performance, that it was a win, that it was such a brilliant showcase for that team and for the women's game.
Yeah, exactly. We've been waiting a while now, to be honest. I know a lot of the players, and I know they had it in them, and we've just kind of been waiting for them to click, and this was definitely one game where they clicked. I mean, the interlinking between backs and forwards on the day was absolutely brilliant, and it just seemed set piece, everything was going well for them, and we saw their confidence gaining more and more in the game, so it was an absolute showpiece to put on.
And we've real X-factor players as well. I know we've probably talked about Bavin quite a bit, and Donegal has brought up Dorothy, who was so impressed. But it was really Hannah Tyrrell that stood out, because we spoke about the number 10 issues before, Fiona, and needing to get somebody to take on that jersey and to start making it their own. And Hannah seems to be doing that.
Yeah, absolutely. We saw a really good performance by her, and that's kind of what fans have been waiting for, someone to put their hand up and say, this is my jersey and you're going to have to work hard to get it off me, and she's certainly done that. I mean, her try was absolutely superb, but I think the thing that I take away from it was her control and her decision making in tight areas. It's going to be a very, very different ball game now against France, and a very quick on rushing kind of defensive system, so it will be good to see her play at that high tempo pace. But certainly she was outstanding against Wales, and I can't wait to see her, and especially against Vernier from France, who's an amazing 10, so it will be good battle there.
Fiona, I couldn't believe how quickly they got up to match pace, and not only just rugby hardened, but international pace. And it is disappointing at the moment that we don't have our AIL, and there really is a lack of that. Were you surprised by that, by the girls, that they've made that big step up to international level?
I kind of wasn't, to be honest with you, because I know it is a big step off when you're getting off the training pitch, but they've just spent so much time together and they're absolutely chomping at the bit to get out in the field. And I know they'd had a couple of internal games, and I've heard stories, it was a lot of bruises and people were getting battered left, right and centre. So I had a feeling when it came to the actual match day, they were absolutely like terriers ready to get out in that pitch, and they definitely did that.
So look, Fiona, we know how impressive they were last weekend. We know what they're capable of now. We know the talent that they have in the ranks. We can see now that they've got balance there. They're mixing the youth and experience really well. They've probably, at this stage now, transitioned into a real good unit, but they're facing France. How big a test now awaits them?
Yeah, this is the big test. We thought, originally maybe Wales weren't at their best against France, but we saw probably not their best against Ireland as well. I think they had 43 missed tackles or something along them lines. There's no way a French team are going to be missing 43 tackles. Sorry. So I'm sure where I'm really interested in the battle I'm looking forward to is up front and in the scrum. We've seen over the last couple of years Ireland kind of have struggled with consistency in the scrum, but I think they nailed it down against that Welsh team, and I'm very excited to see them go against the big French pack, because even with the French pack that was starting for their original game, they had absolute X-factor players on the bench to come into that pack as well. So I think there's going to be a big battle up front, and that's where we're really going to see if the girls can put that platform that they gave Hannah and etc. and Bevan out the back line. They need to be able to do the exact same thing and give them that freedom. And you know, as I spoke earlier, there is going to be a very big, hard upcoming French defence, so it's about trying to hold that off as much as we can.
Fiona, you're speaking my language, because I totally agree. Like, I saw it was brilliant, Sene's try at the weekend, but that's an advancing Irish scrum. Of course you want Dane to be a threat and Hannah to be a threat, but if you're going forward there and a nine takes a ball out of a scrum like that, I'd be having words on the halfway line.
I've done it myself, Johnny Cat. Any nine and ten, you've been killed over the years for me. I absolutely love a scrum going forwards, and they get the look off me when they take that ball out, an eight or a nine. But no, it's exactly that. It was going forward at the rate of knots. They got the try out of it, but I don't think it's going to be the same against France. But they have really improved in that area, and it's something that's going to be excited. And I'd say Hannah is delighted as well, getting that ball clean out there as well and not having to go backwards and receiving the ball sometimes.
They all looked very confident in what they were doing, and also they seemed to be able to take risks, and that must come from Adam Griggs and the freedom that he's given them to make these decisions in the moment. Let's hear what he has to say about France and the Irish cohesion within the team.
I know it's a slightly different format this year in terms of the Six Nations, but your impressions of France, particularly in that game against Wales, I know they did a bit of mixing and matching, but they're a pretty potent side, aren't they?
Yeah, they've got threats across the park. I think, you know, you look at Bourdon at nine and Boulard on the wing, two players there that I think we're going to have to make sure we keep a lid on early on. And again, we've really got to target slowing down their ball. I think if they get front foot ball, they can become very dangerous on attack. So us around that breakdown, making sure we can disrupt it early on and not give them the platform to use that ball out wide is really important. But similarly, I think for us, in terms of our attack, it's being patient and earning that right to play. I think we probably overplayed a few times last week, and that's probably how the game opened up. But I know this week will be a different test, so we have to make sure that we build that platform first, stay patient before we look to expose them out wide if we can.
And just a final question from me. I mean, this week, more than anything else, given what France are going to bring, the breakdown appears to be a rather important area.
Yeah, I think it's crucial. I think you look at any game of rugby and the way it's going, the breakdown is where it can be won and lost. And so on both sides of the ball, really. In attack, if you can create that quick ball, you know, you get a chance to play and keep a defence on the back foot. But again, on the other side, in our defence, if we can just manage to slow up that ball, it gives us a chance to get our defensive line sorted, make sure we have good connections and apply pressure through that.
So that's Adam Griggs speaking to Michael Corcoran a little bit earlier on after he named his team. And Fiona, he does seem to have a very clear plan of what he wants to do and how he's going to approach this game.
Yeah, they've had a long time, I suppose, to look over the tapes and look at French opposition, and he definitely is going in the right direction. The girls, with slowing down that French ball, we've seen in the past, once they get that ball and they're going forward, they can be very, very hard to stop. So I think exactly what he said, that breakdown area is somewhere they're going to be looking at, maybe slowing things down, obviously legally, as they say. But we have two of the best back rows, I think, Kira Griffin and Claire Malloy, and they'll definitely be menaces in that area.
And that's it. Like, he's also identified a weakness for France, and we always say it, if you stop a French team offloading and make them rook, but we're also playing to our strengths there. Like you mentioned, Malloy, Griffin, and Wall just seems like a brilliant back row to take on France.
Yeah, I mean, Dorothy has really kind of stood up in that first game, 23 carries, 8 tackles. She was absolutely outstanding, and I think it doesn't even bother. There's no pressure on her shoulders. She, you know, Junior, as Kira Griffin, she takes her under her wing, and she's showing her a lot, like how to do things up at camp. So I think she's definitely someone to watch, and it's not even for the future. Right now, what she's doing on that pitch, and her carries are so dominant. She's getting gain lines every time she carries the ball. So I think France especially might be looking at her as well after the last game.
So can you tell us a little bit about Emma Hooban coming into the bench, the hooker? I don't know a whole lot about her, but I'd be interested in your take on the inside.
Yeah, Emma Hooban, she's a very, very good. She's played AIL for quite a few years, and I know she's been involved in camps before. She's not capped, but she's definitely been thereabouts for a couple of years. So it's not like she's just been brought in the last year. She's absolutely a great, great ball carrier. Very physical. Niamh Jones was there last week. She's a bit younger than Emma, but they'd be very similar players. Cliona Maloney offers that kind of explosive run, and I think definitely Emma Hooban would be someone similar. She's not bad in scrums either. She's good to come on and make that impact off the bench.
And then the excitement from her sevens days, Murphy Crowe, you know, it is an X-factor player, but Adam Griggs, really interesting that he said he brought her along last week to get the experience, and it is a difference from changing over from sevens to full-on proper rugby, as we call it.
Yeah, that's it. There's a bit of a change over there. I talked a lot to Ali Miller about this in the past, and she's insistent that there's a massive, massive changeover. Yeah, it was interesting. I thought we might have seen Amy Lee in the first game. We didn't. He said he could tweak a couple of things with her, so they must have worked hard in the 4 or 5 days during the week to get her ready to go on the bench. But I've played with Amy before for a season with Munster, and I know what she can offer at 15s. Before she ever went to 7s, she played a good season with Munster, and she really, really stood out. It's actually in that year they picked her up from the sevens program. So she's shown it on the world stage with the sevens rugby. But I think, you know what, she has the footwork, she's defined, she's the absolute rugby brain. So she's going to bring it. And that's definitely one X factor player you want to see coming on, you know. And that's really good. It's been a long time since we've seen a bench full of kind of players that can come on and make an impact. And I think every one of them are definitely capable of doing that.
Fiona, look, I think everybody is excited. We were really impressed at the weekend. But should we be sounding a bit of a note of caution? It is 80 minutes up against a group of pretty much professional athletes, amateur players coming up against a team who have been doing this full time.
Note of caution, but not really. I think these players have been in camp. As I said, they've done 20 camps. Their confidence, for me, what they really need to get going was their confidence. They didn't have it in the games I've seen in the previous years, and they seem to got that under their belts now. And I can see a slight caution. The French are obviously semi-professional. It's a bit different, but from what I saw last week, I will be expecting a very, very tight game. And I know 100% that the girls are going into it really, really confident and would be expecting nothing other than a win here.
Just on that, I'm really interested in Murphy Crowe, because you've the inside there. What position would you bring her on in? You know, I'm always interested when a player comes over from sevens. You think, you know, back three is perfect for them, but our back three is busy.
Yeah, I throw her in there and tight eyes. No. To be honest with you, she'll come on the wing. I'm not sure they've done a lot of work with under the high ball with her. Maybe they have, but I'd be expecting to see her come on for either Laura Delaney or Bavin or whatever. They might change things up, but definitely a winger is probably where I will see them putting her on. And that's where she'll probably be her biggest threat in space, is what she wants. At sevens, there's loads of space. If Ireland can deliver and give her that space, she'll do the magic, no bother.
Fiona, there's a serious amount of competition as well in that team.
Oh, that's it. That's what's been missing as well for the last few years, is that competition. And sevens players coming in, it's kind of really edged one another on. And as I said, I spoke a bit earlier about hearing stories of bruised bodies and, you know, people throwing flags around the place as well up in games. So that's what you want. You want that kind of rivalry up at camp between Munster, Leinster, Ulster and Connacht players. And they seem to have got that back. And I'm sure there's a lot of flagging going on between the sevens and 15 players. Sometimes the old sevens think they're faster than everyone, you know.
Sevens, oh, the bane of my life. Fiona, we'd sent her on last night, and we were asking her, and of course she wouldn't comment on it, but Emily Scariff mentioned, and it's something something that's really annoyed me.
This is actually your third time mentioning it in 24 hours.
Yeah, but it's just that she mentioned the fact that they were looking forward to resting up and then going on to play France in a week's time. You know, brilliant motivation for us.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm telling you, don't care. If I was involved, that would be absolutely something that'd be coming into my team talk before the game. That's total disrespect to the Irish team, and obviously, like, Emily Scarrett's a great player, and I'm sure she mightn't have meant to say that, but there's definitely it would definitely be lighting a fire in the girls, because when you look at those two Welsh games between Ireland and France, both teams scored a load of tries, and I wouldn't have seen much difference in them. If they can perform Ireland on the day, definitely going to take it to France. And Fiona, also Donica, you know from over the years, who knows what type of French team arrive over. They can pick and choose, you know, themselves. It depends if they're in the mood.
Although at this stage we'd just be happy for them to be able to come
just
over.
Arrive. Welcome.
Well, that's true, isn't it?
Fiona, I'd ask you to call it, but I know you'd never go against us. So thanks so much for joining us on Game On. Let's hope for a brilliant weekend with the girls in green, putting in a massive performance and hopefully getting the result. Thanks so much.
No worries. Thank you.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back, Donica. As expected, we got a lot of reaction to our Liverpool chat at the start of the show, with Darren texting in saying the main reason Liverpool lost is because of FSG. No replacement for Lovren brought in. They left it to the last day of the transfer window to buy a championship defender and a 20-year-old defender on loan. Always the cheap options with FSG. Liverpool are a sell-to-buy club under them, and now FSG need to sell Liverpool. It does seem like the conversations are very much starting and people are trying to figure out what to do with Liverpool.
Yeah, absolutely interesting though. Keep the text coming, 51552.
Yep, now it is set to be a very busy time for our Olympic athletes over the next few months, particularly our gymnasts, as Gymnastics Ireland has confirmed a team of four for the European Championships in Artistic Gymnastics later this month. Earlier this week, Ruby joined us as we caught up with European champ and world medalist Rhys McLennigan, who will be heading to those championships, and we began by asking him about his training.
Yes, lots and lots of training. Sure, there's no competitions going on the past year anyway. Last time I competed was in 2019, so there's nothing but training.
That must be frustrating, I'd say, although maybe it's rewarding, maybe it's working out well for you.
I mean, of course it's frustrating for everybody the past year, I'm sure. Everybody's schedules had to be rejigged in some way. But it's just about turning that negative into a positive, and that's exactly what I've done. I kept relaying to myself that this is just one more year of getting better, and that's exactly what I've done. I'm better than ever now.
Rhys, just on that training, like, obviously you're missing the competition side of it, but you're also missing the opportunity to see where your opposition are at. Is that something that concerns you, or do you only focus on yourself?
Not so much, actually. I would just focus on myself. I feel like growing up, I've learned everything I can from the people I'm competing against right now. I'm more looking back, actually, to my predecessors that I would dub the greatest that I've ever done it. So I'm learning from them now more than anything, you know, looking back in old competitions and learning from the great.
Lisa, as regards training, like when you were in lockdown, you couldn't get to the gym. What sort of equipment did you have at home yourself? What were you able to do, and what parts of gymnastics couldn't you do?
So, I mean, luckily, gymnastics is a very body weight oriented sport. So there's a lot of adapting to be done in my bedroom. You know, like my dad was holding me over the edge of the bed to support me in sit ups, and we were trying to figure out everything we can to keep my fitness up during that time. One of which was actually building an extra room under the side of our house. It was a 12-foot cube that was just kind of made out of wood, very makeshift, but it's on the job. And luckily I had a pommel horse in my house, so we put the pommel horse in that little room, and that's where I spent most of my lockdown.
Just on the pommel horse in your own lockdown, but yeah, that's getting very creative, building your own room. But was there any other ways you had to get creative? I mean, what else did you have to try and replicate? Tell us how you, everybody got creative. You must have surely gotten very creative with exercises.
Yeah, it's small things. You know, when you start to go into that creative headspace, you start to see armchairs as parallel bars, and you start to see, you know, the cushions as different ways to do sit-ups on, or you know, there's so many things you can do with body weight training, and that's what's such a beautiful thing about gymnastics is, you know, I don't lift weights in my training at all, so not having any weights at my house was no issue. So I was just able to move my body in certain ways to hit different muscle groups and make sure that I stayed fit and stayed conditioned for when I returned to the gym.
Rhys, you said that you're studying the grades. Have you changed around your routine a bit? Have you added to the difficulty of it?
Yes, I certainly have. So compared to the routine that I did in 2019, you know, I had the highest execution score at that final, but, you know, the difficulty score just wasn't quite there. So I made sure that stuck in the back of my mind, and we put in a new skill into the routine that I'll be showcasing at the European Championships.
Can you tell us what it is?
Yes, it's a skill called the Roth. So we'll see. You'll be able to see it at the European Championships, so make sure you tune in and see it.
Don't worry, Rhys. By the time the Olympics come around, a bit like Katie Taylor going to London, we were all experts in boxing. By the time Tokyo comes, we'll all be expert in the pommel horse, because half the country will be looking at you. How does that expectation sit with you?
It's a very positive thing. It's great that the country is watching gymnastics, and you know, I'm hoping that the country isn't just going to watch gymnastics when the Olympics comes around, because that's one thing that everybody always says, like, oh yeah, I always watch gymnastics when the Olympics happens. But I want them to tune in at every European Championships and every World Championships every year, and see their countrymen winning medals.
It's difficult at the moment, though, Rhys, and probably has been for the last year, because of indoor sport and getting back. Do you think that there'll be losses in participation numbers? Because just from having kids myself, I know that gymnastics is a sport that seems to be rising in popularity all the time, just going on how hard it is to get into a gymnastics club.
I don't actually think that that numbers will decrease. I think that more and more people will just be looking for activities more than anything now. You know, when we get the go-ahead to come back to sport like normal, people will be looking for different and new sports to participate in. So I'm hoping that gymnastics is one of those sports that come to mind when parents are, you know, looking for their kids to progress in sport in some kind of way, because I think it's such a great baseline sport for everything. You know, you can do gymnastics when you're young, and then you learn everything about your body, and you can move on to do so many different sports.
What are you hoping for at European Gymnastics Championships? What kind of do you in your mind have to win to be happy going to Tokyo? Will a medal do you? What's your expectation?
I'm going into every competition with that gold medal in mind, and I'm not shy of saying that, because I know that I'm capable of it, and there's no point in shying away from that. I take confidence in the fact that I'm the number one contender for that gold medal in every competition that I go to, and that's a very powerful thing.
Rhys, thanks so much for joining us, and we really wish you the best of luck over the coming months and years. Rhys was on representing Avonmore Protein Milk, who have teamed up with Team Ireland's Rhys McLennigan as part of their Bring Your All campaign, which highlights the positive, committed and never give up spirit within all of us in sport or exercise.
Very good. It was great chatting to Rhys. Marie, that's nearly it from us. We'll be back tomorrow at 6. We have a busy, busy show. We have Alan Cawley and Fergal Brennan on the soccer. We have Jane Mangan all about the weekend's horse racing. And we'd love to be chatting about the AFLW. So that's it from all of us. A massive thank you to Ronan and Laura Lee. We're back tomorrow, like I said, at 6. The awesome Tara Stewart is up next.
Live across the nation, this is 40 to 11.